But right now, on the phone, Justin Lawman, how are you going?
Mate, how you doing?
Dude, I'm kicking goals. I'm living my best life. You know, just busy, but hey, yeah, what can I expect?
Where's the big ceremony supposed to take place?
At a place you probably know well, actually. It's the Walls End Seventh Day Adventist Church. So great facility there, and it's basically like our thing because
that's great.
It's so good. We got lots of people coming, so we needed a decently sized place, and so we're really, really excited.
Awesome. Yeah. I'm up in the path of the cyclone at the moment.
Oh, really?
Kingscliff, and it is raining cats and dogs here, I've got to say.
Yeah, wow. Gnarly ass. So you guys are already feeling some of the effects from the cyclone that's just off the coast there. Is there widespread panic in Kingscliff at the moment? Or I could imagine, because I know you're up there.
Used to getting flooded, dude, up 100%. Here, aren't they?
I was up there in 2017 when they had the floods. I'd imagine that you were there. You are currently in Kingscliff with the Arise Bible School. That's running up there. Yeah,
awesome. I'm filling in for Dave Astrick because he filled in for us over the weekend at Jindabyne.
True.
So we're doing a trade.
Okay. Ah, nice. All right, they got you. They've traded a world-renowned speaker for big for red me. Justin. Let's go. Nah, that's awesome. That's exciting. That's really cool. And look, thinking of Kingscliff as well, just thinking of all the young people up there hanging out, I don't think they're too worried about a cyclone. But hey, such is life. What is happening in the world of politics and prophecy, Justin?
Mate, there's only one story, isn't there?
Yeah.
The interview.
Yeah, the interview. I did my research. I left it for you. I wanted to hear all about what is the take?
Wow,
what is the go?
Wow. I'd be interested to hear your take just as much, Lawson. It was a bad look, let's face that. Yeah. That's what did Trump say near the end? This is good TV.
Yeah, dude.
Tell our listeners what exactly happened. What was the interview?
Look, Zelensky's turned up to sign a mineral deal with the US.
Okay.
And to say the interview went pear-shaped, you know, one of the reporters challenged him. He's not wearing a suit. And I don't know, he got his back up. Some people are indicating that Susan Rice, Obama's foreign secretary, was coaching him before, and it was all quite a deliberate thing. We don't really know what's going on, but they get into an open conflict on camera with all the reporters there, where Zelensky and Trump and then J.D. Vance jumps in as well, the vice president, and it turned into a bit of a dogfight.
Yeah.
And, there's a whole lot of ways we can interpret this and lenses we can look through it. All over social media, everyone's got an opinion.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it was the dumbest thing I've seen a leader do.
Yeah,
He's finished, man. Yeah. Lindsey Graham, who is a massive Zelensky Ukrainian supporter, he's come out and said, "Let the Europeans take over. Then we're done." And for him, Lindsey Graham, to say that, he's a senator.
Yeah,
that shows the damage that was done. I think Trump supporters loved it. Trump's haters hated it, and it hasn't changed the political landscape at all. It's sort of people that like Trump liked it, people that don't didn't. It wasn't. You can see now why the US doesn't want Zelensky in the room when they're trying to negotiate peace.
Yeah, that's right.
Because he doesn't seem to be there quite yet.
Yeah, that's right. And I think. Zelensky trying to be on brand, and this has been Zelensky's brand, has been the president who doesn't wear suits but wears, you know, sports clothes and is, you know, for the people. Zelensky's attempt to be on brand fell incredibly flat in the face of the world political stage. I think that this has ultimately hurt him. This has hurt them in the long run.
It's definitely damaged him, mate. Yeah. And the thing is, he's gone to England and they're offering him $5 billion as a loan or something.
Yeah.
Without America, England can't do a thing.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Look, he needed America. And Trump, is he a narcissistic dude? Textbook.
Yeah.
Textbook.
Yeah.
That's not how you handle someone like that. You try and embarrass them and take them on. Mm-hmm. On a camera, maybe behind closed doors. Mm-hmm. You could. This is a sort of negotiation that could go on, and they have a row, and then everyone patches it up. And then when you come out to the press, you'd just say, "Yes, we're trying to get peace, and we're doing everything we can." And that's all you'd say, and you'd say that 10 times, and "Yes, we're trying to get peace," and you wouldn't do that. So if the listeners haven't seen it, It's all over YouTube or wherever you want to go to watch it. But it's probably, I don't know, have you seen something like that happen to a US president before on camera?
Oh, not like this. I mean, in terms of, you know, US presidents and their like, you know, interesting media outings, I think that for the last couple of presidents, we've just kind of seen fails more than anything else of, you know, bad moments. Whereas, and again, I'm not saying that, essentially what I'm seeing here is that it seemed as though, look, Trump was like in control of the situation and just made Zelensky look bad. It's just, I think that was just the outcome ultimately. Zelensky looks bad. I really appreciated what you say. Zelensky looks bad doesn't necessarily mean that everyone then loves Trump, because the perspective of, you know, kind of people who lean opposite politically to the Republicans and Trump and whatnot are like, oh, you treated Zelensky so poorly. These are people in
need.
That's
right. It didn't move that needle at all.
That's right.
It didn't move that needle at all.
It looked like, you know, bullying ultimately, for people who are in need. But yeah, in terms of, you know, a president just handling the situation in terms of, yeah, making their political leaders look bad, other political leaders look, putting them in a poor light. It was pretty textbook, as you said. You know, like, in terms of political leaders and interviews and whatnot, like, my mind goes to, yeah, just some of the fails, particularly in Australia, under like the Scott Morrison administration with the bushfires and the floods and a lot of people not wanting to shake his hand and having issues. Like, these are the usually big stories that come out of these kind of media clashes and whatnot. Or I think one of my favorite ones, the moment when Joe Biden forgot Scott Morrison's name when they're standing up there doing like a joint, it was like a joint.
He's a great guy.
It was a great partnership between the UK, Australia and the US, and just completely forgot his name. But nah, Trump was doing his thing. And
so if we zoom out and we forget that personal little interaction and the disaster that it appeared to be.
Yeah.
For the Ukrainian people, I've said it on this radio program 100 times, I really wish this war would stop.
Yeah, 100%.
It is. Yeah. Literally, the more people than Vietnam, more people than Korea, so many have died. Mm-hmm. It's got to stop. There's, you know, we got church members. I remember a pastor that just drug off the street. He's catching a bus to go shopping, and he put him on the front. Never been heard of again.
Wow.
This is horrendous what's going on there. It's got to stop. The globalist side, if we zoom out, Trump's a populist. Mm-hmm. The globalist side, which we'd say all of Europe, including the English Prime Minister, they are in the party of what we'd call globalists. They're not necessarily care about borders and immigration and all of those issues. They hate Putin because he is another. The Russian people love him. I remember being in Russia.
Yeah.
Arguing absolutely. With fellow church members. I said, the dude poisons people. You couldn't convince them that Putin was a bad guy. They love Putin in Russia.
Dude.
And we don't get that back here in the West.
Yeah. Russians in Australia. I know Russians in Australia who love Vladimir Putin. Like, he's their man.
Yeah, he is. And the globalist community, which is getting crushed at the moment by the populace, it's coming up everywhere. Mm-hmm. I think it's a sign of where we are in history. The globalists can't let go of this war. Mm-hmm. They are struggling to get any sort of peace. In their mind, they have to win at all costs. No, there's in Norway, this maritime fuel company has come out and said, well, because of that interview, we will not give fuel to US ships now.
Yeah, wow.
That's not, don't poke the bear that's Trump. That's not a wise move. He's got all the power. Mm-hmm. I think the USA is realigning its military stance in a really significant way.
Mm.
They want to get out of Europe. Mm-hmm. They don't care about all that. They're realigning with their own country, mm-hmm. Greenland, the Panama Canal, all of those things. They're trying to get this big protective blanket around their own country because mm-hmm. they're shaping up with China. And that's really the big picture that's going on. This is a little skirmish. Mm-hmm. In a bigger realignment that's happening in the world right now, and it's of tremendous significance.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really interesting the immediate effects of reduced American involvement in Europe is there's actually quite a few European weapons companies, arms companies, and whatnot that are starting to do really well for themselves as a result because money is kind of staying in Europe, and so we'll see how that goes. Like in terms of Europe's perspective, whether they go maybe towards even there might be a flip towards populism because now it's doing well for their own market. But we'll see. Well, ultimately, we'll see.
The German elections, the French elections, mm-hmm. all of these elections are showing the rise of the populist party. So they're going to have to spend their claiming if they really had to defend against Russia without America's help, mm-hmm. 5% of their GDP, of their overall budgets.
Yeah.
And they're nowhere near that. They're not at 1%. So this would be a massive economic drain on Europe that it really can't afford. The world economy is not in strong shape. Mm-hmm. So there's lots of reasons they need America. And there are Starmer, who is no Trump fan. Mm-hmm. He's come out saying, hey, we want peace too, but we need America. We need America. We'll send troops in if America backs us. It's always if America. Yeah. And that gives you an indication that Europe is not in a strong condition at all. And Trump's walking away. He's almost running away mm-hmm. and getting his whole country realigned to defend against China.
Wow. Dude, and there is a lot happening. And I think really gearing up for some serious conflict. Look, we've got about 45 seconds left. Justin, do you want to leave us with anything?
Lift up your heads, for your redemption draweth near. You know, Jesus is coming. Don't get caught up in all this. Whichever side of politics it is, it's only who's gonna do the least damage. Mm. This is not the answer. The answer is Jesus. Yeah. Jesus is the only one the answer.
Absolutely. Hey, love what we're saying. Love what we're thinking about. Let's look to Jesus, draw near to him. He is trying to draw near to us at this time.
You're listening to the Breakfast Show podcast on Faith FM, positively different.
And you are listening to the Breakfast Show here on Faith FM. You're joined by myself, Lawson, and Shell. Lawson and the Shell. And the Shell. That's awesome. That's awesome. Hey, you're listening to The Breakfast Show this morning, and we are going to get into our next quiz question.
First, I have to do a recant, an apology from the last one.
Oh, recanting.
It's funny. So the question was, how many times did God say to Joshua, be strong and courageous?
Okay.
And that answer is actually 3, and I said it was 4 because in the chapter, the phrase is used 4 times. I had three down, and then I second-guessed myself and re-looked, and I'm like, oh, it's actually said four times. But the fourth time, it's the people just saying, remember that God told us to be strong and courageous. So I will accept either of those answers because I gave the question a little bit confusing, but three was the correct answer.
Okay.
There. So our new question, now this one is like level hard, hard.
Okay. Okay? Level hard, hard. Okay.
Okay. So there's one passage in the Bible in 1 Kings 16, verse 34, for those who are listening in and want to make it an easy question, I'm giving you the verse. Okay. What was the curse the man that rebuilt Jericho received? Do you know?
Say it again.
What was the curse that the man who rebuilt Jericho after the walls fell down, what was the curse that he received? Because God said to not rebuild that city. And it did get rebuilt. And the person who rebuilt it received a curse. Do you know what that curse was? 0491-064-669 is our text line. If you want to have a crack at answering this question, 0491-064-669. It is our difficult question, but I'm going to give you the Bible passage if you want to look it up. 1 Kings 16, verse 34 is the passage. Are you looking it up? Don't be looking it up.
No. Okay, 1 Kings 16. What is this curse? You're saying it's a hard, hard question.
It's one verse in the whole Bible that talks about it. So, you know, you have to know this particular verse in order to know the answer.
Because I think I know.
It's not as big of a story as the walls falling. Everybody knows the story of the walls falling of Jericho, but about the rebuilding of it and the man who did it and what happened to him, that's a far more obscure story. So, yeah, it's a difficult question. It's not difficult as far as trying to come up with maybe a guess. You might get something right.
I think I know this story. Is it something regarding this?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. But I can't.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would give that to you because it is a very hard question.
Yeah. Okay. So I can't tell them my answer then.
No.
Okay. All right. Hey, 0491-064-669. If you know the answer to this very hard question, we might have some correct answers coming through on the text line.
Well,
there.
Valme has sent in basically about what you wrote down.
Yeah.
And so that's like partly true.
Okay. 0491.
You're definitely in the right. You're in the right.
We're in the vicinity. Yeah, that's right. Okay. 0491-064-669 is the number to text if you know that hard question. That hard question. Dude, that's hectic. 0491-064-669. There's a few things you can do with that number as well. As well as sending a quiz answer, you can send in the code word hashtag 10 for today's prize, the 10 commandments by Taylor G. Bunch, which will be a massive blessing to you. You can also send in your birthday if it's in the month of March. And we will put you into the draw to win the Promise Bible. We have a KJV version of the Promise Bible, which is a beautiful Bible. Really, it's quite big, but lightweight as well. I love the binding. It's got a nice material binding. Awesome, you know, full of references.
Yeah, and it's highlighting promises.
That's right.
In the margin, you've got some special promises that are happening. You're looking at one there.
Yeah. So, like, I've got a promise in front of me here from Ezekiel 33:7 to verse 9, which we can read the verses here. It says, "So thou, O son of man, I have set thee a watchman unto the house of Israel. Therefore thou shalt hear the word at my mouth and warn them from me. When I say unto the wicked, O wicked man, thou shalt surely die. If thou dost not speak to warn the wicked from his way, the wicked man shall die in his iniquity, but his blood will I require at thine hand." Woo! Woo! Okay, "Nevertheless, if thou warn the wicked of his way to turn from it, if he do not turn from his way, he shall die in his iniquity. But thou hast delivered thy soul." And so this is the point that it makes on this. That's a hectic promise, but I quite like this. It says, this can be a touchy subject. Who are we to tell someone when he or she is sinning? This passage clearly indicates that God expects us to warn people when they are disobeying God's standards. but how we go about warning people matters. Jesus was always compassionate when he reached out to sinners. He loved them and cared enough about them to show them a better way. With Jesus as our model, we can prayerfully and lovingly seek to rescue people from the eternity apart from God. And that, then it has a reference to Jude 23 at the end there. But I love that. So it's taking...
Highlighting every promise in the Bible, and it will focus on those and what you can draw from each of the promises.
Yeah. That's actually a really cool verse in terms of an encouragement to, hey, like, get out there and warn people. And he says here, like, hey, if you don't warn people as to what they're doing being wrong, does that mean that is that how we live our lives, is just telling people that they're in the wrong constantly? What do you think, Producer Shell? Should we just, you know, at every opportunity, excuse me, that was wrong?
Hey, I've known people who believed that they had the ministry of rebuke.
Yeah, nice.
And they ended up worshiping alone.
Yeah, well, no one wanted to be around them.
Well, yeah. And
also they didn't want to be around anyone.
That's right. Nobody else was good enough.
Yeah. And I think there's a balance that we strike. You know, Jesus lived and walked with the sinners, but he offered them something better. And that's the point that it makes here, is Jesus offers them life abundant. You know, not just to give up their old life that's going towards death, but he offers them something new, life abundant. And this is like the vehicle of the church, is what God has given us to show people that, hey, do you want to join a community of people that, you know, aren't striving to live in the ways of the world, but are striving to do something different, like and live a life truly loving each other, truly being a blessing to one another? I love it so much. This is a fantastic promise in the Bible. Really cool topic. So hey, if you want the promise Bible, 0491-064-669. If you're a March baby, send in your date of birth and we will
do that draw on the 17th.
On the 17th. So you have a couple weeks to get in.
2 weeks from today.
That one. Absolutely. Yep. I want to ask you a question, Priest Shell, and I want to ask it to the listeners as well. 0491-064-669. I want to get a bit personal this morning.
Ooh.
Have you ever made something a god in your life?
There's no way that anyone can say no to that, I don't think.
I don't think so either. But again, I want to ask this question again. Maybe if you're listening this morning, you're not super familiar with Christian terminology. Essentially, what asking that question means, have you ever put something above everything else? Has something been to you like your purpose, your drive above everything? Everything else, the thing that you want, the thing that you're about. Have you ever had that experience, Producer Shell?
For sure.
Yeah,
there's TV, different things, you know. I mean, I was such a TV junkie. There's been a bunch of things.
There's a lot,
but
yeah.
My favorite, it's hard to pick a favorite, but one of my favorite hymns is Oh for a Closer Walk with God.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a verse in that says, the dearest idol I have known, whate'er that idol be, help me to tear it from thy throne and worship only thee.
Wow.
And I just love that, because it just drives home that, yeah, there's so many things in our life that we make into idols.
Mm-hmm.
And how can we, you know, that we have to rip them, we have to separate ourselves from them and make sure that we are worshiping only Jesus.
Absolutely. I remember I had this... It came to me, it was the question of my life, I would say. It was one of the big questions of my life. And that was that I was becoming a Christian. I was studying my Bible. I was convinced that God was real. Not only was he real, that he loved me. He wanted to, you know, bless me and he wanted to save me. And I was also convicted that I should live my life for God. All of this conviction came to me. I remember it was my 18th birthday. I'd been studying the Bible with Christians up until this point, and there was things that I was convicted about and doing, but I remember I saw someone get baptized and I was really like enamored by watching them do that and just seeing the commitment that they had to Jesus. I'm like, this is what I want in my life. This is like 100% like what I want in my life. And I remember, this is so funny. There's actually a good friend of mine, Morgan, who was getting baptized. I watched Morgan get baptized and I took my shoes and socks off and I went up to shout out Pastor Peter Watts, a contributor to the Faith FM breakfast show. I went up to Pastor Peter Watts.
Light in the darkness.
And I was like, Peter, like, let's do it right now. I took my shoes and socks off. I'm like, let's go. And Peter's like, no. And I was like, what? And he's like, no, we need to study. We need to do some Bible studies, bro. We need to see where you're at, which I think was fantastic advice. I think if I had have been baptized at that moment, it would have been a detriment to me because of the experience that I would have after that. And I think that this is maybe just a side point. But hey, the story of the Ethiopian eunuch getting baptized in the book of Acts, people point at that story and they say, see, as soon as you say that you accept Jesus, they should just dunk you straight away. But like we're talking about, the Ethiopian eunuch was a worshiper of God. He was a proselyte. He was traveling, you know, to Israel for Passover. He's a Bible reader and studier. Like,
yeah,
He was ready, right? The conversation he would have had with Philip would have been when he asked to get baptized. It says that Philip studies the Bible with him. We don't have the details of that Bible study, mm-hmm. but it says that Philip shows him Jesus from the scriptures. And the conversation they would have had is, again, like, okay, you know this, like, he has this entire conception of God from scripture already. He's now inserted Jesus. He's living his life as a God follower. It's like, hey, let's just get this across the line with baptism. For me, from a non-Christian family, from a non-Christian background, like, I was not where the Ethiopian eunuch was at. I was not ready. Even though I had a deep desire in my heart to be baptized and to follow Jesus, I didn't even really have a full conception of what that meant. And that conversation would happen in the sense that later we would have a conversation about two big things that I had to make decisions on. The first one was regarding, you know, at the time, just leading up to this decision, I had taken a hiatus from my life goals and career. I would say the thing that was really a god in my life, which was my motorcycle racing career. I had lived in Europe for 2 years previously, racing motorbikes at the highest level, in the, you know, under 21s world championship. I was scouting for, you know, a deal. I was trying to go back over for another year to make motorcycling my life. And basically I was at this kind of point where it's like, you know, if I can have one more year of good racing, the offers will come through and, I can make my life, you know, professional motorcycle racing for the foreseeable future. Instead of that working out, that didn't really work out. I come back to Australia, going through a lot. And, you know, there was this side of, I did want to get back into motorbike racing. I was interested to go back and race eventually, but I also felt convicted, like, hey, I want to live my life for God and do ministry, and particularly motorcycle racing, like on the seventh day, which I had been convicted was a rest day of God, would conflict with that. And I remember asking Peter, I'm like, hey, so like my whole life purpose, my entire life purpose since I was about five has been professional motorcycle racing. And by that point, not only had I been racing professionally, but here in Australia, I was a 6-time national champion. Like, and I won my first national championship when I was 10. Like, that was my whole life. And I'm like, hey, my whole purpose revolves around this. Are you saying that I need to stop doing this because of God? And he just said to me, he's like, look, man, and not stop riding motorbikes. I love motorbikes. Love riding motorbikes. Mm-hmm. Love talking about motorbikes. You know, it's cool. It's a hobby of mine now. But the conversation with Peter was essentially like, bro, like, so you want to do this to, you know, make financial gain and you want to do this as a career? And I was like, yeah. And he was like, man, God says rest on the Sabbath, like from your works. God says 6 days you have to labor. If you can fit motorbike racing into that, you can. But hey, the Sabbath day is for God.
You're listening to The Breakfast Show. Connect with us on 0491 064 669.
It's a major test that you were given right then.
And like, it's not like, oh, okay, I can just like motorbike ride on the other days. Like Saturday is one of the most important days. Sunday's race day in motorbike world, but Saturday is qualifying day. And you can't participate.
You can't be in the race
unless you qualify. So basically you're cutting your opportunity off at the knees, right? And I remember hearing that and I mulled over it, but I decided to make my decision. No. God is bigger than motorbike racing. I want to live my life for him. And in that moment, that was over. Like that dream, that entire dream of my life that I dedicated myself to, that was like blood, sweat, tears, vomit, like everything went into motorbike racing. My body, bro, like even today, I'm feeling the physical effects of my injuries from motorbike racing. In my short career, I stopped when I was 17. I'm like, dude, my knees are creaking and cracking and I can't do push-ups without my elbows clicking. I broke both my elbows. I broke both my collarbones. Like all this kind of stuff. Like I'm feeling it today. Like that was my life. That was my life. And in an instant, through conviction, it was like, no, it's over because it's not going to be a god in my life anymore. The other big one for me was alcohol. I was like big time alcoholic. and similar conversation with Peter, and I ended up making the decision of like, this also won't be a god in my life anymore. Because it was, for me as an alcoholic, it was an everyday drinking. Drinking, every weekend partying. I stopped partying as much as I was on this journey towards Christianity, but I was still drinking a lot. And Peter was like, no, like, this is, we need to stop. We need to stop this. I questioned him. I'm like, do I really need to stop this? He's like, and the brief Bible study that we've had, I'm sure I've said this on Faith FM before. You know, I love talking about this. Peter says, look, Jesus loves you more than alcohol loves you. Jesus loves you more than you love alcohol. Jesus can give you something so much better. Like, just let it go. And he also, like, Peter, that's his background as well. Peter was a bartender.
Yeah, like, that's right.
And he was like, he's now an Adventist, Seventh-day Adventist pastor, which is amazing. Like, he's a Christian pastor, loving God, following Jesus, bringing people to, and
that's
so
great evangelism. Yeah.
Yeah. So he had his own journey and testimony with that. And he was able to share that with me. He couldn't share with me about the motorbike stuff. That was my own thing. But on the alcohol side, he could share with me, like, God, you know, changed my life, and he imparted that knowledge and wisdom to me. And so I made that decision. And so for those two big gods in my life, all of a sudden I'd chosen Jesus. He had given me something so much more. We'd love to hear from you guys about gods in your own life, potentially, that you've experienced as well. 0491-064-669. Tell us your experience. Look, I want to talk about gods today. I want to talk about false gods. We're talking about the showdown on Mount Carmel between Elijah and the prophets of Baal. And the reason I wanted to start with that
is
because it's a story of basically proving which God is real, and which God was there for the people, either Baal or Yahweh, the God of the Bible. And what it showed ultimately is that all this devotion to a false god, the false god of Baal, was in vain and profited them nothing. Even a devotion to that god that would, you know, cost them their health and eventually their life. We can give everything to a false dream, to a false hope. That's how I was living my life. But God wants to give us something so much better, and he proves his validity and trueness in the way that he deals with us. But let's get into it. Let's pick it up in, we're going to start reading from 1 Kings chapter 18 and verse, reading in verse 20. Have you got the Bible there in front of you,
Producer
Shell? Do you want to read verse, we're not going to be reading from verse 20, I think. We're going to be reading from a little bit earlier than that. We're going to be picking it up in verse 19. Can you read 19 for us in 1 Kings chapter 18?
19 and 20 or just 19?
Just let's start with 19 firstly.
Okay. Now therefore, send and gather all Israel to me on Mount Carmel, the 440 prophets of Baal and the 400 prophets of Asherah who eat at Jezebel's table.
Okay. So Elijah puts the word out there.
He's competition like, is on. He's laying out the Let's do this.
Yeah.
Let's have a competition.
It's 1 versus 800 here. He's like, hey, go get them. Go get all the prophets that hang out with Jezebel here. All the ones who eat at Jezebel's table. Jezebel being the queen of Israel. Jezebel being Ahab's, you know, partner, and who had incited much of the false worship in Israel and enforced it through death decrees and all of these really gnarly things. Elijah puts the call out there. Go and get those prophets. Let's see whose God is real. Verse 20, it continues on. It says, so Ahab sent for all the children of Israel and gathered the prophets together at Mount Carmel. So they all go up to the top of this mountain. And Elijah came to the people and said, how long will you falter between two opinions? If the Lord is God, follow him. But if Baal, follow him. But the people answered him not a word. So the people are in this valley.
Mm-hmm.
They're in this valley of
indecision,
right? They know they should follow God, Yahweh. They've been following Baal. And simultaneously, the Bible also says that at this time, you know, when Elijah is complaining to God that, you know, there would be no one on his side, there would be no one, there's no one following God in Israel, God is like, hey, no, there's 4,000 people in Israel who have not bowed the knee to Baal. But this was an incredibly small minority. At this time, like, Baal worship was widespread. And Baal worship is one of the worst of it when it comes to ancient Near Eastern gods. We're talking about a god who is commanding the death of children, like child sacrifice. Like, this is, and you have a prophet here, Elijah. Well, God obviously not loving this situation. You have the prophet Elijah, watching this happen around him as the man who's been selected by God to tell messages from God to the people. And, you know, he's seeing the ruin and destruction of his nation at the hands of these prophets of Baal who are literally telling people to give up their kids to sacrifice. Like, and this is the thing. It's a situation where, you know, if we look at a lot of ancient history and ancient civilizations, particularly if we jump into the Americas, you know, we look at like the Mayans and the Aztecs who like sacrificed a fifth of their population. Like, it was like a fifth of, one of the biggest causes of death in Mayan and Aztec society was, oh, you got sacrificed. Like, oh, yep, you know, and people would just put themselves up for sacrifice. Like, it's a gnarly situation. But in this particular case, they're like, okay, you can either worship the God who, like, emancipated you from slavery, who gave you bread from heaven. Like, this is the history that they have with God. And they've forsaken that to kill their children in the hopes that Baal would make them rich. Like, it's disgusting. It sends a shiver down your spine. But also,
and you wonder why. Why would you choose that God, that fake God, over the real God? And then it all comes down to surrender and obedience, and just not wanting to surrender to God and his laws, which, as we've been saying, you know, it's the law of liberty, but people are self-centered. People want what they want, and it's very hard to surrender your idols and the things that your will.
I'll give you an example of it, because it's like, why would you cause so much harm in order to have so little gain? Right? I'll give you an example. I am personally the biggest anti-pyramid scheme MLM guy. I am like, I'm on big time scam watch. I you know, anyone who comes to me, you know, especially young people who are like, oh, I found this thing, da da da. If I'm your pastor, I will tell you, just like, look, you have the freedom to do whatever you are with your life, but I'll literally sit there. I should make a slideshow presentation of all the reasons why a lot of these companies are just seeking your worst, and they're just wanting to steal money from you. And it's terrible. Like, I really, really hate it. But it's like, there are people with testimonies that come out of those situations that are literally like, they're like, basically you pay to work for a company in the hopes that you might make all your money back and some. It's like, what, in my mind, I'm like, why wouldn't you just go get a job that guarantees that you just get paid? You don't put anything in. You just get paid. And the amount of people that lose money in MLMs, pyramid scheme, multi-level marketing, these kinds of things, I'm like, you're taking a risk of getting nothing and putting so much in up front. Why would you do that? And it's because the hope is, the dream that's sold by every MLM is that you actually, like, if you do this right, you won't have to work that much, and you'll get rich. So it's ultimately playing on a really, I think, the pleasure, the desires of the mind to have lots and don't have to do anything for it, to not have discipline, to ultimately make things easier. And I think these ancient gods and the way these ancient gods were set up was in a similar way. Ultimately, hey, sacrifice your kids will make your life easy. And it's just insane. It's insane to listen to, but how many people do that every single day? Mm-hmm. Not sacrificing their kids, but going through a similar situation.
You're listening to the Breakfast Show podcast on Faith FM. Positively different.
Hey, you're listening to The Breakfast Show this morning. We have a quiz question to answer and then do, and some text messages to read before finishing off our section on Elijah this morning. What is our quiz question? What was the answer?
What was the curse the man that rebuilt Jericho received? His oldest son died when he laid the first foundation stone, and his youngest died when he hung the gate.
That's gnarly. I wrote it had to do with his sons. I couldn't remember whether they died or whether something happened to them. But yeah unfortunately.
The verse, I think, says, you know, that he lost his first son at the foundation and his youngest son at the hanging of the gate. Yeah, so, but it means that they died.
Yeah. Wow. Powerful stuff. Hey, you're listening to The Breakfast Show. Got a few text messages to read.
Oh, we still got one more quiz to
do. Oh, we do have a quiz. Sorry, I was trying to skip out. I was trying to.
This one's an easier one. Okay. Rahab hid the two spies in a pile of what grain?
Oh.
It's easier, but maybe we'll put it at a medium level. It's a very nutritious grain that we've been being told a lot lately to eat.
Mm-hmm.
If that helps.
Okay. Give them the number. Let me think about it for a second.
0491-064-669. 0491-064-669. This is a superfood grain. Rahab hid the two spies in a pile of this. It's very interesting that there was a huge pile of this on the top of the roof where she lived. It showed that they were storing up.
Wait, did you say on the roof? Okay, I'm gonna guess this. Was it this?
Yes.
Ah.
Why did that give it away?
I don't know. There was a connection in my brain. Like literally,
just needed to hear that part of the
when
story
you said
for
that,
it to make sense.
Because I've heard it said that they've sometimes used this to enforce roofs and stuff, which is okay in the ancient world. So,
interesting.
Yeah, this is like when you said, because I was thinking of like, oh, well, it's superfood. We eat a lot. Oh, I'm just thinking, you okay, just,
yep,
you know,
yep.
Da, da, da. And then when you said, that's so funny. Hey, 0491-064-669, send in an answer. What was the superfood that they were that they were hiding it? 0491.
It's also used for roof building.
0491-064-669. Warren wrote in. He said, "With the cyclone coming, we believe it's God's leading. That an opportunity to house it was blocked on the coast." And so, from what I'm reading here, they were going to be house sitting at Caloundra. And it was blocked, and then you know the cyclone came through.
And yeah. When those things happen, you're like, oh, so disappointed, and then they're seeing already why that happened and that it was God's leading. That's thanks for sharing that, Warren.
That's awesome. Margie wrote in. She wrote, "Morning guys, hope you are both well. We're living our best lives, Margie. My birthday is on the 31st of March, the very last day. Lucky it wasn't a day later. So you, Margie, will get in for our epic March birthday giveaway."
I love it. She's saying, I'm glad it wasn't a day later, because what's the day after March 31st?
April Fools.
Yes.
that would actually be funny. That would be a funny prank if she put it in as March 31st and then she was like, April Fools, and it wasn't. It was actually, I don't know. I don't know how April Fools were. I kind of know, but hey, look, we're falling short here in the studio this morning. I love what Ben wrote in here. He said, we were talking about our idols, our gods, the things that were a part of our life that we put above God and were our real focus. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Ben wrote in and said, mine was playing soccer. Soccer, massive, you know, intense sport, huge, huge over here in Australia,
yeah,
in Europe,
another,
even more.
Another
so.
Weekend activity, yeah. That can be very conflicting for Sabbath keepers.
Yeah, and he said here, I love your testimony, Lawson. So yeah, that experience of, hey, you know, this huge focus of, you know, the potential riches and glory of, you know, winning and being professional and these kinds of things in focus. And then, hey, when God calls to get out of that, we have to listen. Simon wrote in. He said, great questions about idol worship. Pleasure was my idol.
Yes.
Which is so real.
That is so real.
I mean, if we be honest, pleasure being an idol, like, is a foundation of basically all, like, illegal activity that we can see in the world, whether it's, like really, you know, I think of our friends over at Destiny Rescue and child trafficking and, you know, or whether it's the drug trade, whether it's all of these things, dude. Like, pleasure being an idol for people is huge.
And it just brings it right back to our story that we're looking at, because that's why so many people were trying to choose Baal.
Yeah.
And they're like, you know, they know in their heart who the real God is, but they just, and we see that so much in today's society where you just have to deny the existence of God, and you have to find some way to be able to disprove him. And you've got the theory of evolution. You've got all of these, you know, no God could be so cruel, and all of these kind of things that people just throw out so that they can excuse themselves.
That's right. Which, again, like, I love what you said, no God could be so cruel. It's like that argumentation that God is cruel and evil and terrible and whatnot is essentially the exact same argumentation that Satan used. And he convinces people of that argument, that God is cruel and awful and terrible. He convinces of them of that through ignorance, just through sheer ignorance of who God is. A lot of people who make this argument of God is so cruel, while they maybe like know the Bible well enough to throw a passage at you of God being cruel, you then, if you throw back to them the 15 passages in return for every one passage, the 15 or 20 or 50 passages in return of God being loving, kind, merciful, you know, it's, oh, but hey, God is so, like, and it just goes to show that there's such a lack of understanding, a lack of biblical literacy that's kind of fueling this idea of God being so cruel.
Yes.
Anyways, that being said, we're continuing on in this story. And just a cute text message in from Val May. She said, what a great job you guys are doing this morning. Thank you so much. Oh, Val May, you're a legend.
That's encouraging.
Thank you for the encouragement. We're going to continue on. It says here, so they're up there, right? And Elijah makes this challenge. The people are silent. The people are silent. They don't say a word. They're experiencing conviction in their hearts. And continues on here in verse 22. It says, then Elijah said to the people, I am alone. I alone am left a prophet of the Lord, but Baal's prophets are 450 men. Therefore, let him give us two bulls and let them choose one bull for themselves, cut it in pieces, lay it on the wood, put no fire under it. Yeah. And I will prepare the other bull and lay it on the wood, but no fire under it. Then you call on the name of your gods, and I will call on the name of the Lord. And the God that answers by fire, he is God. So all the people answered and said, it is well spoken. So he challenges
him. Sounds very, very fair competition. Yeah. There's no way that we're not going to be able to know who the winner is.
Yeah.
This is a good test. We like it.
So what I think is interesting here, because many of us are familiar with these particular stories and familiar with the outcome. If you're not, we're going to get to it. But we're going to eventually see that Satan and, well, I would say the false gods, ultimately, they don't come through. They don't come through for the Baal worshippers here. And
they run around for hours and hours and hours, exhaust themselves, they're cutting themselves, they're doing all of this stuff. And I love the way that Elijah taunts them.
Yeah, we actually read it here. So they're doing all this hectic stuff. Oh, Baal, hear us. This is in verse 26. But there was no voice, no one answered. Then they leaped about the altar which they had made. So it was at noon that Elijah mocked them and said, cry aloud, for he is a god. Either he is meditating, or he is busy, or he is on a journey.
The toilet.
Or perhaps he's sleeping, or must be awakened. And so they're just like, and it says here, then they're cutting themselves as blood is gushing from them. But there was no voice, no one answered, and no one paid attention. Mm. And so these people are ultimately, they're left with nothing. You know, what's really interesting, this is a point that we've made on the Breakfast Show before, but Satan doesn't love his own. Satan isn't here to prove anything. There is a question to ask you, like, why didn't Satan, you know, manifest? Obviously, God isn't going to come through and do a miracle for these Baal worshippers. They would be relying on Satan, the other side of the equation. Why didn't Satan just come through for them? And why didn't Satan come through for them and, you know, light the fire under the bull? Is Satan not powerful enough? I think there is maybe a few answers to this question, but I think my initial reaction is that Satan just doesn't care about these people. These people who are hurting themselves, who are cutting themselves, you know, doing all this to gain something, Satan just could not care less. He's like, it means nothing to him.
He ultimately just wants to have everybody on his side, but he doesn't care about his subjects.
Yeah,
and right. He knows that as long as they're not wanting to surrender to God, he's got them.
Yeah, that's right.
So why would I even bother doing this? I've got these guys.
Yeah. He could not care less. He mm-hmm. could not care less. Definitely couldn't care enough about them to manifest a miracle. And in reality, Satan isn't listening to you. He doesn't care about you. He is only wanting to cause you harm. And his goal is achieved here when they're cutting themselves and nothing is happening and they're completely embarrassed mm-hmm. before everyone else. Elijah, on the other hand, the Bible says, he says, instead of yelling and cheering, he says, come near to me. So all the people came near and he repaired the altar of the Lord that was broken down. There's actually an altar on top of Mount Carmel that was broken at the time because they were worshipping false gods. Mm-hmm. He actually repairs it here. He gets 12 stones representing the tribes of Israel. He pours all of these jars of water over the top of them, which is a really interesting comment at the time. They're going through a terrible drought.
That's right.
And so he's using the precious
water. And
this
is an added thing that the Baal ones didn't do.
Didn't even do. Firstly, he's using their precious water, and he's using it to then make a point that even if this is covered in water, which, you know, even ancient people understood that having something that's wet isn't conducive to it lighting on fire.
That's right.
He's like, even if it's covered in water, let's see what happens. This mm-hmm. is what he's doing here. So then it continues on. It says, and it came to pass at the time of the offering, the evening sacrifice, that Elijah the prophet came near and said, Lord God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, let it be known this day that you are the God in Israel, and I am your servant, and that I have done all these things at your word. Hear me, O Lord, hear me, that this people may know that you are the Lord God, and that you have turned their hearts back to you again. Then fire of the Lord fell and consumed the burnt sacrifice. Man, this is goosebumps right here. Imagine being there. And the wood and the stones and the dust, and it licked up the water that was in the trench. Now when all the people saw it, they fell on their faces and they said, the Lord, he is God. The Lord, he is God. And Elijah said to them, seize the prophets of Baal, do not let them escape. And so when they were seized, Elijah brought them down to the brook Kishon and executed them there. You might be looking at this execution here. Hey, pretty heavy result. But look, these people were like killing people's kids. Like mm-hmm. in the ancient world, if they didn't have a prison to chuck them in, you know, they were taking an eye for and a tooth for a tooth. So this is what was happening. And clearly these people weren't repentant. If they tried to be repentant, I'm sure Elijah would have spared them. But no, they were going down with the ship of Baal worship. But we see here this amazing result. You know, the altar here, it lights up in flames. All the people, they bow down in worship, in obedience to God.
The part that just blows my mind is how short-lived it always is.
Yeah. Oh, you mean after this?
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is the thing. It's what's so interesting. I think that God, this story actually of 1 Kings, this saga, which will eventually, the worship of Baal ends with a character in the Bible named Jehu. And basically the way that it goes is God says to Jehu, he says, hey, I rose Elijah up to prove to the people that I'm real. And what he says to Elijah, what he says to Jehu is that actually didn't work. Because what happens is all the people, when they're given the immense proof that they shouldn't follow Baal and that they should follow God, in the face of that immense proof, they fall down on their face and they recognize God and they're like, you are real. There is no way that we can doubt it. Mm-hmm. You are real. You love us. You want to help us. You know, God, it's even by God's hand that then the drought ends and all of these things happen. In a very short amount of time, Elisha goes through his own experience kind of, you know, denying God and coming back to him and, you know, a hectic thing. But all the people go back to worshipping Baal. And ultimately, God comes to Jehu and says, Jehu, these people didn't learn from conviction. Like, I gave them what every atheist out there right now is asking of God. Like, hey, why don't we just, you know, why doesn't God just show up in the sky and then, you know, then I'll follow him? God did that for the children of Israel. It meant nothing to them. Because obedience to God isn't about whether you believe he's real or not, because he is real.
Mm-hmm.
Obedience to God is allowing him to work in your heart, submitting your heart to him, submitting your life to him and saying,
that's right,
God, you take control. That the outcome of that is obedience. Knowing that God is real does not lead to obedience. Why? I mean, go back to Adam and Eve. They disobeyed in the garden. Perfect people. Go back to Satan in heaven. He disobeyed in heaven. before God. These people distrusted God. They disobeyed him. They left him. And so ultimately we saw with Jehu, the answer was, okay, I tried to get these people through miracles. It didn't work. I'm now, you know, we're now sorting out the problem of Baal worship with the sword. And it's, you know, Jehu that goes through and ends
and
up.
Jezebel has her end.
Has her end at the hands of Jehu. Jehu, the prophets, all the prophets of Baal and the Baal worship centers and all this stuff, they all find their end at the hands of Jehu. But I think what we can see here is that God is wanting to lead us to have conviction. Hey, there are gods, you know, there are gods that can be set up in the name of all kinds of different entities and beings and whatever it may be. But at the end of the day, God is calling us to a life of him, not to be addicted to pleasure, not a life of putting our own desires and wants and needs in front of us, which, by the way, God says if we have our heart after God, he'll give us the desires of our heart, which would be good things that would bless us. But in this particular story of the battle on Mount Carmel, he's ultimately showing us, hey, if you are asking, hey, God, give me a reason to be obedient to you, show me why I should follow you, show me why I should submit my life to you, he'll give it to you. And he gives it to the children of Israel here.
And you know, it was a contest between the two gods.
Yeah.
The true God and the false God. Uh-huh. And later we find again in the New Testament, Jesus has to go through that contest again and die on the cross to try to prove to everybody who the true God is. And wins the contest again.
Yeah.
And we're still going through this constant thing of people wondering who's the real God.
And this is the thing. This theme is running all the way through to today.
Yep.
You're sitting here listening to The Breakfast Show. You're wondering, hey, whom shall I follow?
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's soccer or motorbikes or pleasure, whether it's something that's promising, you know, something temporal that ultimately resents, and usually, especially chasing pleasure usually results in pain. Or you can choose to follow God, who is wanting to give life more abundant today and a future in heaven. Hey, guys, choose you this day whom you will follow.
You're listening to The Breakfast Show podcast on Faith FM. Positively different.
I'm by myself, Lawson. And we have Shell, and we have an empty chair across from us, Joseph, off gallivanting, living in Japan.
Our angels sitting in there.
Absolutely. Hopefully they're enjoying the show. You're listening to The Breakfast Show this morning, and we're here to wrap things up, actually.
Yeah. It was such a great study. I want to keep going.
Yeah, dude, this story is so epic. We'll have more time to talk about it tomorrow and the next days. And this idea and this concept of, hey, there is truly a choice to be made against the people, the forces vying for your attention, either the force being one of those forces being God, and the other being Satan, and you know, using whatever he can to get you, whether it's the prophet of Baal, whether it's soccer or motorbikes or pleasure or whatever it may be. Very, very, very interesting. I've loved studying it through. And I think, you know, we've received some text messages that have acknowledged that as well. We got an interesting text message from Margie, actually. We're talking about her birthday being on the 31st of March. She wrote here, actually, I made the tax year and my parents got a year's tax refund for the last day of the tax year.
Confused by
that. I actually kind of don't know what that means.
Because I thought the Australian tax year finished in June.
Yeah, that's what I thought as well.
Maybe it didn't back in the day.
Yeah, I don't know. Because at the moment, our end of financial year is that, you know, June, July time. So, hey, Margie, maybe we need some explanation there. But hey, look, getting a tax refund, good on you. It's like the greatest feeling of all time.
What a great daughter. Hey, she came through just in time.
That's so awesome. Hey, you're listening to The Breakfast Show this morning. Look,
answer to a quiz, eh?
Oh, please.
All right. The grain Rahab hid the two spies under was flax.
Was flax, yeah. Dude, I think in the New Testament, right, it talks about how it says it's pitch. I don't know where I got flax from. There was just something about roofs. Because roofs are usually made out of pitch. Like in the ancient world, they're made out of an abundance of some kind of grain, natural material. Like they'll make roofs out of straw or leaves or whatever. And when you said that they're on the roof, for some reason it just made me go to flax.
Yeah, it's obviously it's in the recesses of your mind. You knew the story. That's right. Enough to
but also, flax is awesome for you.
Oh, so good for you. Yeah, my husband did a sermon on Jericho mm-hmm. on Sabbath, and that's how I put together this quiz.
Mm-hmm.
But he was saying that they were storing up. They were uh-huh. storing up food
uh-huh.
for the conflict that mm. they knew was coming because they knew that their war was coming.
Okay.
But they didn't realize just how quickly it was going to end. And
that's right. And yeah. and they weren't ready. Their food didn't really help them. And
Rahab knew.
Yeah.
Rahab knew what was coming.
That's right.
And so, and she believed. She believed in the true God. And it's such a powerful story, her story. I love it so much.
Mm. That's awesome. Hey, we've also got here, oh, we got an explanation from Margie. She wrote, it was the Southern Rhodesian tax year.
Okay.
Which, dude, shout out.
Of course.
South yep. Rhodesia. I mean, now Zimbabwe is interesting. So, man, living over in Africa. Rosalia wrote in, she said, I was thinking it was lentils because of superfoods.
Yeah.
Lentils are great for you as well.
They are.
Dude, I love some lentils on toast. We're talking about, like, that is a peak vegetarian meal.
There are several superfoods.
Yeah.
And, yeah. But flax is, like, the brain one. And yeah. we've been talking about it a lot here on
yeah.
Wednesdays like, as well.
It's very hormone yeah. balancing as well. Like, flax, I've heard. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah. It's kind of a do-everything food. It helps your brain, balances your hormones, like, lifts you out of depression. Like, every...
Chia and flax. I'm on a half a cup a day at the moment.
Dude, that's awesome. That is so good. Do you feel, like, so healthy? You feel like so
it's
happy.
Helping so much,
yeah,
for sure, mm-hmm. and yeah, it's also helping. Like, cause I get dry eyes,
yeah,
and it's helped me a lot with that.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
What happened? What is dry eyes? Don't you just like blink and they get wet again?
Man, I wish I had your eyes so badly.
That's like, is that a common?
If you
thing?
Don't even know,
dry eyes.
Are. Yeah, no, just when
they dry out
and they get really super flaky. It's part of my lupus situation, I guess. We'll have to talk about this some more sometime.
We should.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. Well, hey, eat your flax, man. If you want wet That's eyes right. and a smart brain, eat your flax. Hey, right now we have come to the end of our show. We've got amazing programming up after this. Stay tuned for Tassie Encounters. But you've been listening to The Breakfast Show here on Faith FM. Remember to talk faith, to live faith, and act faith, and you'll grow strong in Jesus Christ.
God be with you till we meet again. Be with you till we meet again.
Thanks for being a part of the Faith FM family. Join our community on Facebook or get in touch at 1-800-FAITH-FM.